Have you seen Chuck Norris lately? He's still kicking butt and staying active well into his 80s. What's even more shocking is he looks more jacked than ever and seems to have more energy than guys half his age. And it's all thanks to Morning Kick, a revolutionary new daily drink from Roundhouse Provisions that combines ultra-potent greens like spirulina and kale with probiotics, prebiotics, collagen, and even ashwagandha. Just mix with water, stir, and enjoy. Unlike other green drinks out there, this one tastes exactly like strawberry lemonade and has hundreds of five-star reviews. Go to roundhouseprovisions.com/save44 for up to 44% off your regular priced order. Plus, every purchase is backed by a 90-day money-back guarantee. So if you want to experience smoother digestion, a boost of energy, and just an overall healthier body, then go to roundhouseprovisions.com/save44 today. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. Results can vary.
Ohio, ready for some quick mental health facts? Let's go. Nearly 2 million Ohioans live with a mental health condition. In the U.S., more than 50% of people will be diagnosed with a mental illness in their lifetime. Depression is a leading cause of disability worldwide. So why are some of us still stigmatizing people living with a mental health condition when we know all of this? Let's listen to the facts and beat the stigma. Ohio, challenge what you know about mental health at beatthestigma.org.
The world of 911 emergency dispatching is brutally diverse. One minute you can be talking with someone about parking violations.
What's the process we are to take to have people towed? Because it's actually delaying the mail.
And then all hell can break loose. Then the rest of the day is crazy. We could have murders.
Hill County 911, what's your emergency?
I just killed my children.
Home invasions.
He's in my house.
I shot him.
You shot him?
He was coming up towards me and I shot him.
Natural disasters.
Tornado came through and got us. I'm buried under a bomb to all my life.
Even bombings. My show, Music City 911, will put you in the dispatcher's chair. Put you ear to ear with the callers and responders. And keep you on edge from start to finish. I hope to both educate and entertain, as I'm a 911 dispatcher with over 20 years experience. And just like dispatching, every episode is different from the last. Music City 911. Real 911 calls. Real 911 dispatchers. Available to listen to on any podcast app.
I definitely don't want to forget the most important part of today's case, that it is a listener suggestion from Tilly out of Nova Scotia in her hometown of Dartmouth. So thank you very much, Tilly, for the suggestion. I really appreciate any suggestions that you guys have, which you can always email me at amillionotherchoices@outlook.com, or you can reach out to me on Instagram if you do have listener suggestions. Today's case is pretty frightening because it displays how vulnerable we are to violence as women, even when we're in positions of power and strength in society. This is the murder of Catherine Campbell.
You obviously have a very high tolerance for murder.
He is beyond saving. And I lost a piece of my heart that I'll never be able to get back.
May God bless your dark, broken soul.
Catherine Ann Campbell was born January 15, 1979 at the Aberdeen Hospital in New Glasgow, Nova Scotia, to her parents Dwight and Susan. She had a sister named Amy and a brother named Jarrett. She was really creative as a kid and just really nothing ever stopped her from doing things. She set up her own ice cream cart once when she was 8. She got her supply by phoning an ice cream company and arranged it all on her own. And as Catherine grew, she did everything she did with a passion. She was described by family and friends with the words, simply like no other. And she worked at the Stellarton Fire Department as a volunteer member for 10 years, which takes courage and strength. And the chief said of Catherine, she was always the one that was right in the middle of the action and really digging and going. She was a good gal. And then she then worked as a compassionate and dedicated police officer with the Truro Police Service, where she had been for 6 years by 2015. She was a police officer, a daughter, a sister, an aunt, and she knew when to be loving and caring and when to be like tough and fearless. Her Aunt Mandy said that if she set herself a goal, she accomplished it. And at the age of 37 in the fall of 2015, she was single, ready to mingle, but not really looking for anything serious. Her work kept her busy. And in this day and age, having a partner isn't exactly necessary if you're paying your own bills. So on the night or sort of early morning of September 11th, Catherine left her apartment to go to a pub called the Ale House at about 1 a.m. Now, I'm not sure if she was going to meet friends there or not. Probably not. It was likely like her regular hangout when she was off duty and she just knew a lot of the regulars there. She was like finally off duty for the week. She had a bit of a stressful week, which I would think as a police officer, most weeks would be. And she was ready to just kick back and relax, have a few drinks and just kind of hang out for a bit. So meanwhile, in another part of town on the day before, 27-year-old Christopher Garnier, the only child of Vincent and Kimberly, originally from Sydney Mines, had completed firefighting school in Waverley. He took a volunteer job until something more permanent came up in Hayman Plains. He supported himself by working at Good Life Fitness or Simplex Grinnell, which is like a security company installing fire alarms. He sometimes worked at his dad's occupational health and safety company. Well, he had been living with his girlfriend, Brittany Francis, but they had decided to separate. Money had been kind of tight for him, and he agreed to move out to find a new place. But he was also supposed to be starting a new job. So the long-term plan for a while was for him to move back in with his parents for a little bit. But for that night, his friend Mitch DeVoe said that he could stay at his place, which was on Macaulay Street, for a night or maybe a few days until he got sort of settled. Mitch had a pull-out couch, and the two started the evening of September 10th, having a few drinks at his place, smoked a little bit of weed, and then they also piled themselves into a cab and then headed for the Ale House. And the night went kind of downhill from there for Mitch. He wound up finding himself later waking up in the drunk tank. But the night went a little bit better for Chris, who met the lovely Catherine at the bar. Now, I'm not sure. I don't think anybody really knows if Chris and Catherine had met before they were at the bar. But Chris is on a break from his relationship and Catherine's, well, like she's a grown woman. I don't know how else to say it. And Chris is not an unattractive man. And he's like 10 years younger than her and really fit. So, you know, they start chatting it up. And that leads to some dancing and a little bit of making out. Okay, well, maybe kind of quite a bit of making out. Like, I guess the bartender had to tell them a couple of times to like cool it. So obviously the evening is heading towards like a one-night stand. And again, Catherine, she's a grown woman and a cop. You know, like a one-night stands can seem kind of dangerous. And like, I think for the mad average woman, they kind of could be, because you either have to bring a stranger to your own house or go to a stranger's house. But I mean, I'm just going to remind you that you are actually far more in danger from people you know and love. I mean, I'm just saying. So anyways, they get in this cab and they head to Mitch's house for a nightcap or whatever they're planning on doing there. Now, remember, Mitch is at the drunk tank at this time, so he's not home. And this was around 4 a.m., which is kind of what leads me to believe that Chris and Catherine would have probably seen each other around the pub there, like, and probably Mitch too. I mean, they were best friends. Because to go from like strangers to leaving with each other in like 3 hours is probably not feasible. So she more likely had sort of seen him around before, said hello to him, you know, oh, where's your girlfriend? Well, they broke up, blah, blah, blah. Anyways, consenting adults, it's all good by me. Only it probably wasn't all good because Catherine didn't show up for her shift on the Monday morning, the 14th. So her co-workers are right away like something's not right. So they asked one of the dispatchers to start looking for her, and he went to her apartment in Dartmouth. Her TV was on and her alarm clock was ringing like constantly, but there was nothing that really appeared out of place other than that. Her bed did not appear to have been slept in. Now, they were able to track her movements on the Friday to the alehouse and then saw on the CCTV cameras at the bar that they had sort of met up, were talking, kissing and stuff. And the cab driver that had picked them up said that he had noticed some tension between the two of them, which I'm not sure if he meant like sexual tension or like angry tension, but he dropped them off at Mitch's apartment on Macaulay Street. So they start looking at the CCTV cameras around that building. And the two had been dropped off by the cab at 4:28 a.m. and then they went inside the building. 43 minutes later, so not a lot of time, Chris comes out of the building, wheels one of those like large green recycling bins inside the door, like inside, like sort of the door and then inside the place. And the bin appears to be empty. He's moving it and wheeling along without any real effort. He comes back out later and is wheeling it again. Now he's just in a pair of shorts and his bare feet. This time the bin, of course, appears to be heavy and there are a couple of black garbage bags sticking out of the top of it. So officers kind of like their hearts sink at that moment. Chris was not at the apartment on the 14th of September. The next day after meeting up with Catherine, he had actually gotten back together with Brittany. He then went to a birthday party for his dad, started a new job on Monday the 14th. Mitch hadn't really noticed anything out of the ordinary when he came home from the drunk tank. Well, other than the mattress on the pullout sofa was gone, but that was because Chris said he had vomited on it and he had to get rid of it. Well, of course, none of this is helping the officers feel any better about this. So the investigators need to know where Chris went with this green bin because he didn't come back to the building with it. It's not with any of the other bins. Now, the place where Mitch lived from the street, it kind of looks like a house, but I think it's actually more like a fourplex with like four units in total, with each having its own entrance on the street level. And I could be wrong about that. I don't want to give out the exact address because, well, I just don't. So the footage that they were watching is probably came from like Ring cameras, maybe cameras posted outside of the building, because I don't think they would have had any kind of like hallway cameras. It's not an apartment building. So they tracked down a witness, Andrew Golding. He was on his way to work on the morning of the 11th, and he was walking past a man. He was wheeling a green bin behind him. He was coming down Agricola Street and then turn left on North Street towards Barrington Street and then the McDonald Bridge. Andrew said he passed by me in very close range with the bin, close enough that I had to step out of the way. He had a frown, a grimace on his face, as if he was under physical or mental duress. So the officers obtained footage from the Bridge Commission and saw that Chris had wheeled this bin to kind of a wooded area near the bridge and then dragging like something kind of heavy towards the area, but it wasn't the bin, but it was something that he had sort of grabbed from around the area. Now, unlucky Constable Adam Cole was tasked with going to this wooded area and looking around. So he was using his flashlight because it was dark by this time. This was on September 15th. He saw some small wheel marks in the dirt under the bridge and then spotted a red colored box, and seeing the box kind of made the hair stand on the back of Adam's neck. So Adam had to crawl to where the box was. He lifted it up enough to see the back of a head under it. And there was a flower clip in the hair. And the green bin had been found. It was discarded somewhat nearby. The red box was actually later described as a feral cat box. And like, so I guess it's like a trap that they use to keep stray cats out of the area. It weighs about 90 pounds. Constable Randy Wood was called into that area to do the photographing and videotaping of the scene. And he was in the process of setting up some lights because it was still dark out. And while setting up his equipment, he got a call to take it down like really quickly because they were tracking a suspect vehicle and it looked like he was heading to that area. So he quickly took his lights down and Randy and Adam hid out of the sight until the car pulled up, which was pretty much at the spot right where those wheel marks had been. And when Chris got out of the vehicle, he was arrested. And inside the vehicle, which was actually Brittany's SUV, they found a blanket, a tarp, rope, and gas cans, and some gloves. There was also packed in his car his toiletries, some clothing, his passport, and medication, and notes that he'd received from Brittany, like love notes. Chris was taken in. He was questioned, and like a little bit of this is available online, but he doesn't really say anything, and you can really barely hear it. I wasn't able to clean up the audio, so there's really no point in playing it for you. But I was able to get a transcript of a small portion of what he did say about what his plans were after he'd killed Catherine, which he basically cries and says he doesn't remember what happened as far as actually killing her, which he clearly did kill, which we'll get to some more of the evidence that they found in a bit here. So Constable Jody Allison, who was questioning him, says, okay, well, the stuff you had in your car, what was that for? Well, I had my bags because I wasn't sure if I was going to leave or not. Right. What else? The tarp and gas. It could have been for one of two things. Which were what, Chris? That's what I'm saying, Chris. What were those things for? What? What did you have those for? You know what you had them for. You were going back down there to get her. Thought about it. Yes, you were. And you were going to go. What were you going to do with the gasoline? I don't know. Chris, stop playing this game. Okay, seriously, you knew what you were going to do. If there hadn't been anybody around there, you would have went down and did that. I don't think I could have. I drove by there before. Yes, I know you drove by there before. We were following you. I appreciate your honesty, okay? I appreciate your honesty. I was going to go somewhere. I don't know where. One thing I forgot to grab out of my truck was I have a sleeping bag. I was going to use the tarp like as a shelter, use the gas because the ground was wet, but that crossed my mind. So you were going to use the gas to dry the ground out, you mean? Well, you were able to burn wood and make a fire. Okay, I see what you mean now. I don't know what I was thinking, but I couldn't. Chris, you had your girlfriend's car too, right? Why? Why would you do that? Because you didn't want... No, I didn't have a lot of gas left, and I thought that she might have more in case I had to go for, like, further away to try to get away.
Have you seen Chuck Norris lately? He's still kicking butt and staying active well into his 80s. What's even more shocking is he looks more jacked than ever and seems to have more energy than guys half his age. And it's all thanks to Morning Kick, a revolutionary new daily drink from Roundhouse Provisions that combines ultra-potent greens like spirulina and kale with probiotics, prebiotics, collagen, and even ashwagandha. Just mix with water, stir, and enjoy. Unlike other green drinks out there, this one tastes exactly like strawberry lemonade and has hundreds of five-star reviews. Go to roundhouseprovisions.com/save44 for up to 44% off your regular priced order. Plus, every purchase is backed by a 90-day money-back guarantee. So if you want to experience smoother digestion, a boost of energy, and just an overall healthier body, then go to roundhouseprovisions.com/save44 today. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. Results can vary.
This country was built on a distinctly American work ethic. But today, work is in trouble. We've outsourced most of our manufacturing to other countries, sending away good jobs and diminishing our capability to make things. American Giant is pushing back against that tide. They make the kind of high-quality clothing staples you need for a comfortable, stylish, and active summer wardrobe. Like vintage-style tees, tough tank tops, breathable polos, lightweight sweatshirts, shorts, and so much more. All made right here in the USA. From growing the cotton to adding the final touches. So when you buy American Giant, you create jobs for seamsters, cutters, and factory workers in towns and cities across the United States. And it's about more than an income. Jobs bring pride, purpose. They stitch people together. Support America's workers and get 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com with promo code STAPLE20. That's 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com, code STAPLE20.
Fall's here, and so are incredible sales at Tanger Outlets. Find must-have handbags, footwear, and all the latest fall arrivals, all at unbeatable savings. Shop top brands like Nike Factory, Crocs, J. Crew Factory, Coach, Gap Factory, Old Navy Outlet, Under Armour, and even more brands you love. Save more every time you shop with deals up to 70% off. Tanger Outlets, always on trend, always on sale. Plan your trip at Tanger.com.
Now, some of the additional evidence that they found were his necklace, which had actually been a gift from Brittany. He had thrown that on a roof of one of the houses near Mitch's. That chain had both his and Catherine's DNA on it. He went out and purchased a new one so that Brittany wouldn't get suspicious of it. It got damaged when he was strangling her, which is sort of what they believe was the cause of death for her. Likely she was grabbing at his neck, which did have some scratches on it to defend herself. Some of Chris's DNA was also found under Catherine's nails. There was Catherine's blood found in the grooves of Chris's watch band, as well as some in a sink in the house. In the dumpster at the EHS parking lot, which was across the street from Mitch's, they found a black garbage bag which contained a t-shirt with blood on it, Catherine's keys, and a couple of bloody towels. The mattress and the bed sheets that he had told Mitch had vomit on it were never found. Also never found was Catherine's ID, her shoes, or her cell phone. Her autopsy showed that she had likely died of strangulation and also suffered 2 black eyes and a broken nose. Now, obviously, Chris was put on trial for murder and interfering with human remains, which I believe was in May of 2018 that happened under Justice Joshua Arnold. The Crown's case was that, for whatever reason, we'll likely never know why, in the 43 minutes that Catherine was in Mitch's house with Chris, he punched her and beat her before manually strangling her with his hands, which is an act that takes between 2 to 6 minutes before the person's dead. And this is what I really hate about strangulation as a cause of death for someone. If you shoot someone or stab someone, it's quick and final. You could claim, like, there's no moment for regret. What's done is done. Like, you can claim, I don't know what I was thinking when the gun just went off or whatever, and it's too late to take it back. The damage is done. But when you put your hands on someone's neck and put pressure there, it takes a while. Like, it's not like in the movies or the TV. It takes continued and hard pressure for like 2 to 6 minutes. And if you lift your hands, the person starts to breathe again. So, like, make no mistake, strangulation is a choice. It is not something that you can say, I don't know, it just happened. Like, choking doesn't just happen. And to demonstrate this, the Crown prosecutor, Christine Driscoll, she stayed silent for 2 minutes during her closing arguments so that you could see, like, just how long that is. It is a very long time. Now, Chris testified on his own behalf. The defense said that Catherine had died during consensual rough sex, which, like, Catherine had wanted to involve punching and slapping. So she wanted 2 black eyes and a broken nose. But also that he didn't remember anything, and pointed to the fact that he had searched on his computer after the murder, Cipralex and violence, Cipralex and alcohol, Cipralex and marijuana, and Cipralex and memory loss. Now, Cipralex is like a brand of escitalopram, or it's like an antidepressant. They said he had acute stress disorder over his recent breakup, and then PTSD, and was basically insane at the time, running on automatism, that not in control of your own actions thing that the defense attorneys like to use. Now, this is the story of what he claims happened. So they were laying on the pullout bed, and he's like pleasuring her with his hand, and she asks him to punch her, which, like, she asked him to do while his arm was already across her neck, and she's like pulling his arm, basically cutting off her own airway when she does it. And then he noticed some blood on his arm, I guess after he punched her or slapped her or whatever, gets up to wash it off. Like, I guess he's wondering, like, oh, what's that from? And then comes back and she's gasping and then just stopped breathing. So let's see how some of this cross-examination with Miss Driscoll, the prosecutor, went. You've come up with an explanation that explains from your point of view what happened, and it also entirely places the explanation and blame on Miss Campbell, correct? I'm not trying to blame Catherine. She was nice to me that night. Just because she wanted to do that doesn't make her a bad person. So Christine asked her, well, you said you when you were arrested, you heard Catherine take her last breath, but now you say that you heard air leaving her lungs up to the very early morning hours of September 11th. And then Chris said that he couldn't remember the details. He wasn't sure what he heard or when. But you're a trained firefighter, aren't you? You're a trained first responder, and you don't know what you heard? Well, I was trying to decipher what I was hearing. I didn't know. Well, you would know if a person's neck was injured, wouldn't you? And that great care needs to be taken when handling that person. So your arms across her neck, and you went to get a towel when you saw blood on your arm after slapping her across the face, and you pulled her up by the shoulders and shook her when you got back. You're not the least bit worried about injuring her? Honestly, I don't know what I was thinking. Well, why didn't you call 911 or do CPR? Well, he didn't really have an answer for that other than not remembering anything or what he was thinking. During the police interview, he never mentioned anything about domination or asking him to choke her. Constable Jody Allison had asked specifically about rough sex, and he had said, no, it wasn't like that. He says, I was telling them what they wanted to hear, and I didn't want them to think I was just trying to blame it on her. Well, you're blaming her today, aren't you? So after 5 hours of deliberation, the jury said he knew exactly what he was doing and convicted him. And Justice Arnold agreed that he was fully aware of what he was doing when he dumped her body and hid it in the bushes and then tried to get rid of a bunch of evidence and clean it up. He was pretty perturbed. This is the judge that he had left her after dumping her over a small cliff from a base. It was a dirty green recycling bin, and then put a cat box on top of it before going back to his girlfriend and then going on like nothing had happened. And then when asked if he had anything to say, he stood up, he unfolded this little piece of paper he took from his pocket and said, I never intended for this to happen, but my actions contributed to Catherine's death, and I accept responsibility for that. I have a hard time understanding why I did what I did afterwards and still can't remember most of those actions. I'm disgusted by them. I'm sorry every day for the pain I've caused you to go through, and I hope that you can one day forgive me. So during victim impact statements, Catherine's mom said, as we struggle to deal with our loss, we know one thing, there will be no forgiveness, none. How do we put into words how our lives were forever changed by the death of our child? You cannot imagine unless you've been there yourself. The disbelief, the heartache, the emptiness, sorrow, nightmares, tears, and the sense of loss consuming. Catherine was the victim. And every day we walked into this courtroom, she was victimized over and over again. We were constantly reminded of the accused rights, but what have we seen of the victim's rights? It is our family that has been given a life sentence with no chance of parole. Like, hear, hear, Susan, hear, hear. In the end, he was sentenced to life with eligibility for parole after 13 and a half years for Catherine's murder, and then another 4 years for indecently interfering with human remains, which is concurrent to the life sentence. Now, he appealed, blah, 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 on the basis of his statements weren't voluntary or something stupid, whatever, it was denied. Now, I want to get to the part about the mitigating factors that were used in reducing his parole eligibility. Now, this was the fact that he had no criminal record, and as best as anyone can tell, had never done anything remotely like this before. But you would not believe the number of people that testified at his sentencing in support of him, begging for leniency for him. So let's kind of out them here. Well, first there was Brittany Francis. She went back to him right the night after he killed Catherine. She didn't know that he'd killed anyone. He replaced her necklace so that she wouldn't ask questions. She testified for him, and the Crown showed her a bunch of text messages between herself and her friends that showed that Chris wasn't exactly the best boyfriend, and that while they were separated or on a break for one night, he not only slept with someone else, but he brutally killed her and then hid her body. So let's just sort of read this. This is from the sentencing documents themselves. While very briefly separated from Miss Francis, Mr. Garnier met Miss Campbell, brought her to Mitch DeVoe's house, murdered her, wheeled her body around in a city in a green bin, and then dumped her in a brushy area of downtown Halifax in an effort to hide his crime. Mr. Garnier also brought a new chain as a replacement for the one that had been a gift to him and that was broken during his murder of Miss Campbell. At the time, the chain was on the roof of Fred's. He replaced that chain so that Miss Francis would not be suspicious of him. Mr. Garnier then immediately reconciled with Miss Francis, but did not disclose any of this information to her. Miss Francis testified that despite his not telling her about these events, she does not believe that he was untruthful with her, as she says she did not ask him about these things. Miss Francis maintains that Mr. Garnier is a trustworthy person. While Miss Francis is a loyal source of support for Mr. Garnier as a result of what I can only describe as her naive comments, I do not find her to be a reliable witness at this sentencing hearing. So now let's name some of these other peeps here. Now, again, this is straight from the court documents. Now, we'll give him credit for anyone that's like direct family members, because family, I mean, they say nice things about you even if you do kill people. Until he murdered Miss Campbell, Mr. Garnier lived a pro-social lifestyle. Mr. Garnier has provided character reference letters from Vincent Garnier, that's his dad, Angela Garnier, that's his stepmom, Brittany Francis, of course, his girlfriend or common-law spouse at that point, Floyd Gates, who's his employer while he was on bail, Tracy Schroeder, his co-worker while he was on bail, Jennifer Aker Gracie, who was a friend of his, Laura McKagan, a friend, Kristen Hyman McIntyre, friend, Mitch DeVoe, friend. He killed her in his apartment. It could have framed him for it. Daniel McDonald, another friend, J.L. Russell, Malcolm McDonald, Sharon Garnier, who's his grandmother, Patricia McErickson, McEachern, that's his aunt. Crystal Logan is the sister of Brittany's. Robin Mills, who's the brother of his stepmother. Allison DeVoe and Andy DeVoe, they're friends of his stepmother's. April St. Hill, a friend of his mother's. Mary Aker, the mother of one of his friends. Diane Harrison Slack, who's a friend of the family. Trevor Morin and Carol Morin, friends of the family. Paula Francis, who's the mother of Brittany's mom. Paula Francis, who's Brittany's mom. Linda Louise Meisner, who's the grandmother of Brittany. Barry McDonald, who's a friend of the family. Amanda Trault and Kevin Clark, friends of his. Kimberly Edmonds, that's his mom. Aaron Francis, who's the brother of Brittany. Calvin Edmonds, who's his uncle. Paul Millington and Karen Millington, who are also friends of the family. Patricia Axworthy, she's a second cousin. Myrtle Richards, who's the step-grandmother of Chris's. So the court says, these character references variously describe Mr. Garnier as a decent, thoughtful, and gentle person. They say he has volunteered his time variously to worthy causes and has loyally and bravely supported persons who were in trying situations. Some of his family and friends are in disbelief at his participation in this offense. Some dispute the jury's verdict, and many request leniency on behalf of Mr. Garnier. I have a lot of friends too. I'm pretty sure they would throw me to the wolves if I ever killed someone. And just so my friends know, I love you like milk chocolate, but if you kill someone, I'm testifying against you. And that was the murder of Catherine Campbell. And again, the part that really bugs me is that Catherine was a woman. She was tough. She was trained in self-defense. She was completely independent, capable of taking care of herself. And she was still victimized and like still vulnerable, still found herself defenseless. And dude, like what the fudge crackers? Like what could she have possibly said to you for you to strangle and punch her like a cop in like 43 minutes? Like how completely terrifying that a guy with no red flags, I guess, based on his friends, can just snap like that. And not just snap, but continually put pressure on a woman's neck for 2 to 6 minutes without letting up, without realizing that you're making a colossal mistake. Anyways, I'm going to be back again next week with another case. In the meantime, you know what to do with your rate reviews and all that stuff. And as always, thank you so much for listening.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.